Started a book arts gallery and program at a university you probably haven't heard of, Florida Atlantic University. Now that's in the cultural desert of South Florida, and most of our students I consult have seen all parts of the body because they don't walk around covered up like they do up here. Tattoos and the most obscene place you can imagine. In any event, I gave a collection that I had been collecting. I didn't know it was a collection. I didn't know they were artist books. And I kept some of Mr. Ehrenberg's book in there, in that collection. And I tried to give it away. It was getting old, and my wife and I said, she was sick, but what are we going to do with this? Well, to give it to a dealer, that will take a time. So we started giving it to see if any of our universities, my wife graduated from Pitt, and offered it to Pitt, they were interested. They wanted it. Offered to my university in Penn State, they were interested. They wanted it. We offered it to FAU, they didn't want it. Why didn't they want it? Well, the president said, is it back up in the academic programs? Well, it was an idiosyncratic collection. I collected about nothing, about everything. It was how the book looked, is what I offered. Books as a static object is what I learned I was doing all these years. So we had 2,800 books, all art books, many of the very famous ones that you're talking about here. They had good taste. And we went to the university and they said, well, what are the programs? He said, back up, he said. Didn't think of anything. You know, there wasn't any specific one. It wasn't on literature, it wasn't on this, it wasn't on science. And the president said, I don't want it. He said, I don't want to make the decision. Take it to the Board of Trustees, so the head of the library. I said, you want me to go with you? He said, no, I just want you to give me four or five books that you think are representative of this collection. He wanted them. So we went there, showed the trustees, they said, we must have them. So we took them. And they asked me, how do you handle these things? I said, I don't know. But they said the librarians didn't know how to handle these. They're going to put them, how do you classify them, how do you put them on a shelf? How do you enter them into the system?
Question.
How do you enter the system? So I said, just let me do it. And they said, well, who's going to design the room? I said, get an architect. The architect said, what do you do? I said, I don't know, but I'll sit down and do it. So they did it up, but everybody says it was one of the most magnificent rooms ever made. No wood. No clothes, everything open, everything touchable. So we did it, and that room was 800 square feet. March 27th, we're opening up in a new 5,000 square foot room. How about that? Well, when we first got the collection, the university said, well, since we have it, we have to put an exhibition on it. Well, we have a big, this is in, by the way, this university is 28,000 students. It stretches for 150 miles. The main campus is Boca Raton. We have all the parks. So they have an art department. And they teach museum design, among other things, and how to run a museum. The guy running it is from Williams, where all those Tom Krenz and all those guys come from, who run museums. And he didn't want to do it. He said, this is an art. See our problem? The arts museum, to see it as that's art. He said, but I have to do it. I said, I'm going to make it famous. And what he did was very bright. He took his brightest students, like, how's this for your discipline? He said, you have to design a exhibition for these books. And they gave you the brightest students, and they did a paper, and they listened to a class assigned. And they did what I was told by others as the best use of an exhibition of books of artists was ever done. And it's a authorities and people came from all over the United States to see this. And nobody ever comes on the campus to see these exhibitions. It's hard to park. Many campuses. They came for this exhibition. The students came for this exhibition. The public came for this exhibition. One Saturday, nobody comes to the exhibition. It was built. That wasn't a kind of this on the right. There's people flooding into South Florida. That's what's happening. There's people coming. In any event, that's interesting. How do you use this? Is that an academic pursuit? That would use human design program? They designed this exhibition. So they did.
Thank you. Thank you. That's an amazing story.
I don't want to put you on the panel.
I'm sorry.
There's a lot to be said, okay. And I can tell you all the things.
I just need to make a quick note on the side here, Mr. Jaffe. I'm really glad that you came and that you have all this to say.
We need to open
this up in just another minute.
Yeah. Okay. In any event, all the things that you're doing, we do some of the things you can do. This is a new university. I don't have antique books. I don't have all the books. But because of this collection, we just got the 8th largest Revolutionary War collection in the United States as a gift. Because of what they saw was done with this particular collection. The university benefited by that. But in any event, we have a huge Spanish population now. So I buy Spanish books. Mexico's nearby, all the islands, all this. So you build your collection to put your constituents in. And how do you do it as interdisciplinary? You have a class in Spanish, translate some of this, how well we translate that Spanish.
This is brilliant. This is an amazing story, Mr. Jaffe.
So can we
open this up to anybody else who would like to make a comment? If not, I'd like to turn it back over to the panelists and the moderator.
Yes. Question?
I was wondering if the students make the books within the environment, special collections, and the different departments get the student books into the special collections.
Yes, in the case of Wellesley, definitely. We keep one copy of every student book. And I take the opportunity when I think it really needs to be seen by more people to catalog it for the collection.
That's exactly the same with us. One copy of every student work goes into the collection. We actually catalog them by class so that you can go in and see a letterpress 2005 spring or whatever, and you can look at the entire work of the class.
At Wesleyan, it's been a little bit more hit or miss. We have a good collection of student work, but it's certainly not everything. And it depends a lot on the instructor and whether the instructors, and also the edition size. Certainly Robin has been very good about always making sure that her students make enough copies so that one comes to special collections and archives, but that isn't always the case. And some of the senior theses have been unique books. So in some cases we have them or have a representative copy, but not always.
Brad? Are any of your students going into any of the MFA liberal arts programs?
Yes, at Wellesley, Iowa has just started a new joint program on librarianship and bookmaking. Somebody here might be able to give me the actual name of the degree program. But one of our students has gone to that. Another is going to Alabama. Several are going to preservation, University of Texas, Yale. Can't think of any others. Right, and the student went into architecture, but she was a book artist.
Some of our students just go directly into the workplace, so we have at least two very flourishing fine presses that have come out of our letterpress classes, and they're actually doing professional work and actually making a living out of it. So I think they just sort of jumped a couple of steps.
We have a similar mix. We also have a fair number of students who come back to talk to us about careers in librarianship. special collections librarianship particularly. That, in my experience, that doesn't seem to sink in until a few years after they've been out of school.
Yeah, I'd actually say that librarianship is the thing that more students are interested in, particularly special collections.
Yeah.
I have a question over there?
I had a question, sort of along the same lines. You talked a lot about introducing liberal arts to the public and to students. I'm wondering about the other end of that, which is a sort of a theory that people support and also discuss about the trade program. And what we do is sort of create that discussion between the art historians and the special collections librarians to sort of share two halves of the knowledge.
I think maybe it is that you have to create a critical mass because it's not going to come naturally to, say, the art and art history department. They don't think like that. But when you get it from, it's sort of the supply and demand thing, and so the students are pushing and pushing, and so finally you're going to move forward with a program. The library, the Marriott Library, of course, is not an academic department. So, for any credit courses, we are in one way at the mercy of a university department, whether it's the English department or mostly what we have collaborated with is the art and art history department. It's a long slog. It has taken quite a few years just to get to this point. I feel that there's some critical mass going on. My background is art history, and so, of course, that's what I'm interested in. But you have to sort of sneak up on it, because if they know what you're doing...
Infiltrate.
One area where there is some critical theory going on that's kind of new, I think, is, for instance, with the Wesleyan students' senior theses. It's not enough to just do the artist books. They're required to write about them as well, at least in most cases. It depends a little bit on who the advisor is, but often there's an essay that goes with it. Now, of course, they're analyzing their own work, but they're also often putting it in a context of other either other artist books or art historical movements or history of the book or all of the above.
I'd also like to add that actually the English department in creative writing is a little bit more lucrative, and it has taken a lot longer to break into that. The idea being that most creative writers, when they first are confronted with book art, say, I don't want my poetry to be permanent. I want to write it on toilet paper so it's ephemeral, until you actually see, they see what can be done. I'm on several PhD committees for creative writing students who are actually doing their work with a view to book art. And so it's going to take a lot longer, but I think that there is very positive movement in that direction. And I think that you have to be patient, because this is not a short-term thing. You just had the infiltration thing is true.
I'd like to say that I think it's really about educating the academic community that you have at hand. For instance, the museum at Wellesley College collects portfolios of prints, but if there's any printing that is text, they call me and say, do you want this book? They think that therefore it doesn't belong in the museum. I mean, it's that rudimentary. That's where we have to start. So I have at least enlightened the museum now to see that there's overlap, that you don't have to say this is a book and this is a print. The whole thing could be the art form. And my next step in infiltrating is to have an exhibition at the Museum of Artist Books, which would get a lot more notice than doing it in the library, unfortunately. But that's where it's going to be. Yeah. Yes?
Yeah, your last remark just brought up a memory I had reading Philip Hawker, who had that wonderful situation. And I believe President Cohen always said, what's all that junk doing down in that room? You know, that was the basis.
At Harvard?
Yeah, it was just in the 40s. He said, what's all that junk doing now? And he it was like Baroque books and all that sort of thing. What's all that stuff doing there? But what I think came out of all of your talks was the notion that people just have to start looking and reading. So for instance, I've been involved with Center for the Book. I'm on the Post Club in California board. Every time we do an exhibition, I did a show on Jack Stauffer for the Center for the Book 5 years ago. The problem always is, how much can you handle? If you can't handle it, to that extent, I think an exhibition is fair. We had to do some material in cases, but I deliberately didn't do Jack's books. I did ephemeral material, and it was about Jack's trip to Europe with his family. It was a whole thing about a printer who did not print for 5 years. It was all about his time away. And it was deliberately structured because I knew we couldn't handle the major books. But in your situations, to the extent that you make the book available, that it is a structure that moves in time, is experience, I think that's invaluable. And in fact, that's the greatest infiltration of all. And I think it goes back to what Henry James said, that I want to make you see. To make you see. And he did it in prose, but I think you can do that as librarians. And that's a slow but incremental process. And it doesn't require, actually, vast exhibitions. It's that attention saying, well, I think you're ready to see this book.
Well, that's so why we call it infiltration, yes.
Yeah, you've got the right tactics.
Yeah.
We can take one more question. We have to, unfortunately, we have to take a half an hour for our exhibitors to bolt a sandwich before they have a chance, to, you know, when they have to be in the public. So, one last comment, please.
Yeah, you all talked about how you had programs and events for people to make sure to come in and look at the technique and print their own books. I'm wondering about when you have classes come in, probably usually an art class, or somebody who's teaching a professor in the art department that comes in and runs their class name. How do they use your collection to talk about content development? Do they, rather than just
Well, in the case of using rare books, which is mainly what my talk was about, they usually send me their syllabus. So I see what it is they're talking about week to week. And then I choose books from the collection that are either primary sources that they've already read or ancillary material. If they want a talk about the history of the book, I use those books to cover the history of the book as well as I can with those books. But if it's, for instance, an English class, let's say romantic poetry, they'll use our Blakes, and a professor will talk about Blake and Wordsworth and the Brownings, and we have all of those primary sources on the table. Some can be handled and some cannot, but at least it's an opportunity for the teachers to teach from the original material, not, you know, a 20th century edition that looks nothing like the original. So it's visual as much as it is content in that case. With artist books, those are generally used by me, and I show the students, you know, layout, format, typography, materials. Why did the artist choose this? And we have a discussion about the making and the final product. I don't know if that answers your question.
One of the classes that comes to mind for us is graphic design and typography classes, and so we will work with an individual professor. He will pretty much tell us where he's going with the class and that he wants historical books so that we can pull those for the class. And then at a certain point, the class literally, besides coming over to see the books, comes into the studio and they do their, you know, each typography class at one time or another has to design a classic page layout. And they've always done it on the computer. And so you have this sort of just non-connect of this classic page layout with this two-dimensional surface. And so they now come into the book art studio and literally set their type and print their page layout. And believe me, their editing is very tight, very quickly, because, you know, it's a lot different to edit in the press room than edit on the computer. And so it's just a sort of this symbiotic thing back and forth.
And our approaches are very similar to what Ruth described, but I would like to mention that there are also a number of assignments that come out of these classes. They're not always just a sort of show and tell, interesting as that might be. At Wesleyan we have, and you'll, if you look at the Old Books New Pedagogy exhibit, you'll learn a lot about this, but we have an assignment that we do in class, often in special collections, that's called the Mystery Book Exercise. And it I've never done it with artist books, though it could be done that way. But students have about 7 minutes to size up a book related to their field that they've never seen before, that's not on the syllabus, that's a, you know, more minor work on the topic or something unusual. And then they have to answer a short series of questions that help them really figure out would it be something valuable for their research or not. And then they report back to the class. And so we try to do some more interactive things like that as well that really get the students to go a step beyond the book as an artifact into the content as well. And, you know, we don't do that with every class, but it comes up fairly often.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.